Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to Policy Forum Pod, the podcast for those who want to dig a little deeper into the policy challenges facing Australia and its region. I'm Martin Pierce. Policy Forum Pod is produced by policyforum.net and we are based at Crawford School of Public Policy, Asia and Pacific's leading graduate policy school. And if you're keen to make a change in your career and get into policymaking, then there's no better place to come and study. Join us for a Master of Public Policy at Crawford's beautiful surrounds. You can find out more about us and our range of degree courses at crawford.anu.edu.au/study. We're just about to dive into this week's topic, but before we do, we wouldn't want to miss the opportunity to invite you to join the Pod Squad. That's you, our listeners, plus our presenters and some of our panelists. We'd love for you to join our little community on Facebook. You can find us there as Policy Forum Pod, and there is no better time to join because we're just about to record the third episode of Ask Policy Forum. I'm really looking forward to this. This is the special series where you get to ask the questions, and we've created it to give you a chance to ask whatever questions that might matter to you. So please don't be shy. You can ask us anything from hard-hitting policy questions to our panelists' favourite comfort food recipes. So get onto your keyboards, type in Policy Forum Pod into the search bar on Facebook and hit join. We can't wait to hear from you. This is National Volunteer Week in Australia, and National Volunteer Week is a great chance to recognise the amazing work that volunteers do. Volunteers are truly the lifeblood of the communities that they work in. Every week, huge numbers of Australians give their time free of charge to help out in a wide range of causes. But the coronavirus crisis has consigned most of us to our homes, and as you'll hear today, that's had a huge effect on volunteers and the organisations that depend on them. So on this episode, we want to take a look at volunteering in Australia and particularly how COVID-19 has reshaped the landscape of volunteering in the country. And just in time for National Volunteer Week, ANU researchers have published a new study together with Volunteering Australia looking into the experience of volunteers during the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic. And we've invited one of the authors of the report, Professor Nicholas Biddle, to join us in our virtual studio today. Nick is the Associate Director of the ANU Centre for Social Research and Methods and the Director of the newly created Policy Experiments Lab. Hello, Nick. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
And we also have the CEO of Volunteering Australia with us, Adrienne Piccone. Prior to being CEO of Volunteering Australia, she was the CEO of Volunteering Tasmania, and she's got over 15 years' experience as a volunteer manager, trainer, and management consultant. Hello, Adrienne. Thanks for joining the podcast.
That's great to be here, Martin.
It's great to have you both with us today. Now, before we dig deeper into COVID-19 and volunteering, I'd like to get a bit of a snapshot of volunteering in Australia sort of prior to the coronavirus crisis. Adrienne, when we talk about volunteering, what do we actually mean? Who are volunteers and what kind of roles are they performing?
Yeah, look, it's a great question. And the way we define volunteering at Volunteering Australia is time willingly given for the common good without financial gain. So long as an activity meets those three criteria, we will call it volunteering. And what we know is, most of our data comes from the census and from the general social survey. And what that tells us is that nearly 6 million Australians give time to community each year as a volunteer. But what I always like to say about that is we believe that's just the tip of the iceberg, because what we capture as part of the census is that formal volunteering that happens in a not-for-profit setting. And what we know about volunteering, of course, is that it happens everywhere in our community. It happens in environmental organisations, in education, in the arts, in sporting groups and emergency services, as well as community welfare. And quite often volunteering that happens outside of those formal settings. So the volunteering, when I say formal, I'm thinking of volunteering that happens in an organisation like Red Cross or Salvation Army, for example. Quite often what we find is that in that informal volunteering is that people are just doing it as part of children's activities or doing it as part of their hobbies or passions. And often they don't even call themselves volunteers. And that's why we say it's just the tip of the iceberg, because it really just captures that formal volunteering. But in actual fact, you know, volunteering is going on around us every day, everywhere.
Now, Nick, what Adrian was talking about there in terms of 6 million volunteers and that only being really the sort of tip of the iceberg, that's a huge proportion of the Australian population. So in terms of the economy, what was the role of the volunteers in Australia's economy before COVID-19 hit?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And clearly our volunteers bring much more than just kind of economic benefits, but the economic benefits aren't small, they're very large. So while it's quite difficult to estimate, I think the most recent estimate I've seen is about $46 billion to the Australian economy from the contribution which volunteers make. And as Adrian said, that's really just those who respond to the questions on surveys, which are always a little bit hard to tease out. And I think it's a really good point that some people, when asked in a survey, in just a simple question, we think, no, I'm not a volunteer, I'll say no, when the reality is they are performing activities which not only have economic benefits, but also have a kind of social benefits. And I think the other thing which is worth kind of keeping in mind is that these benefits aren't distributed evenly across the population or across the economy. So the benefits of volunteering, for the most part, not exclusively so, but are felt by those who are most vulnerable in the community. So while volunteering has a large effect across Australia, the effects are likely to be greater for those who need it most.
Now, COVID-19 has cost almost 1 million people their jobs in Australia alone, and it's pushed millions more into unpaid care work. And of course, it's impacted volunteers as well. Nick, your study looks specifically at their experience. But before we drill down further into that, what sort of time period did you consider in that study, and what was it hoping to capture?
Our data comes from the Life in Australia panel, and that's essentially a longitudinal data set where panel members answer a survey every month. And as part of the profile of our panelists, we have a question which we ask we ask reasonably regularly to keep it updated, as whether you've undertaken any volunteering for an organization or a group over the last 12 months. And according to our data, about 36% of adult Australians had said that they were volunteers at least for some point in time over the previous 12 months. So that was kind of our baseline data. And then when we ran the survey in January, ran the survey in February, we asked some questions about subjective well-being, about economic outcomes. And then when we were designing our survey during the start of the spread of COVID-19, we added an additional question about whether someone said they'd stopped volunteering over the previous 2 months. So essentially, as of mid-April, had someone stopped volunteering since the start of February?
And so in big picture terms, what were the key findings of the report?
Yeah, so in terms of who stopped, we found almost 2/3 of the self-reported volunteers had stopped volunteering or undertaken any other unpaid work in the previous 2 months. Now, that's a massive drop. We estimate, and these are estimates, so that equates to a drop of about 12 million hours per week of volunteering activity. And to put that in perspective, the drop in paid work is about 56 million hours. The drop in volunteering on top of that represents a very large decline in socially beneficial activity during COVID-19. We also found that there was some differences in who stopped volunteering. So female volunteers were slightly more likely to have stopped. And quite importantly, older Australians were much more likely to have stopped volunteering than volunteers who were slightly younger. So if you look at the 65 plus and the 75 plus age group, almost three quarters of volunteers in that age group said they'd stopped over the previous 2 months. And that's a very large, not only a decline in the benefits which those individuals are bringing to society as a whole, but there's all, that also translates into a decline in the well-being and the outcomes of the volunteers themselves. So while the contribution of volunteers to Australia is large, the contribution to the volunteers themselves is also large. So there's very strong evidence from the literature that those people who engage in volunteering have a greater sense of meaning, a greater sense of purpose. It improves well-being. It increases social interaction. And the decline in volunteering has coincided with a drop in well-being and other measures for those who were volunteering prior to the spread of COVID-19.
Now, it strikes me it was quite an interesting time to do this study because the coronavirus crisis followed almost immediately after the bushfire crisis. Mm. You know, and anecdotally, I think the there was a strong community urge to volunteer as a result of the bushfire crisis. So what has been the sort of picture of volunteering over the first few months? How has that changed?
So we didn't find a decline or change in well-being for volunteers, which is any different to the rest of the population during the bushfire crisis. So in some ways, there's almost two crises, as you kind of alluding to. The bushfire crisis, which didn't lead to a decline in well-being or volunteering for those who said they were beforehand, as opposed to COVID-19, which not only led to a large drop in volunteering, but also led to a very large decline in subjective well-being for those who were volunteering. So part of that, I think, is, as you said, the sense to which the response to the bushfires was a community-led response, as opposed to the response to COVID-19, which is retreat into the household and withdraw from social activity. So two crises of very large effects playing out for volunteers and non-volunteers very differently.
Adrian, as someone who works with people in the field, what are you hearing about how volunteers have been impacted by the crisis and how volunteering roles have been impacted by, for example, social distancing requirements?
Yeah, and it's been a fascinating time and period in history, and because volunteers, of course, have just been thrown into the spotlight like never before. You know, I think I feel like one, you know, sort of key messages for an organisation like Volunteering Australia have always been around the power of volunteering, and that volunteers are a workforce. They may be unpaid, but they contribute so much, you know, socially, culturally, and environmentally, and economically. And often, you know, we find it hard to kind of get that message across. Whereas I think really what we've had in the last sort of 6 or 8 months is two examples of how we actually would not have been able to survive, literally, quite literally, without the volunteer workforce. And of course, you know, the experience during the fires was that sort of there was a few ways in which volunteers were involved. So on the one hand, we had the trained volunteers, so the fireys and the SES volunteers, who were stepping up, literally saving lives, saving homes, being, you know, very active, often working very long hours and making a massive contribution to their communities. And then we had, on the other hand, we had volunteers sort of stepping up as part of the recovery process, so joining with organisations like Rotary or Red Cross or Salvation Army and actually, you know, helping with the cleanup phase as well. So we've kind of got volunteers, you know, really making that a massive contribution. And then the experience of COVID has actually been quite different from a volunteering perspective. And certainly what we found in those really early days was that there were sort of two experiences that volunteering involving organisations had in those early days. On the one hand, we heard around sort of 80% of volunteering involving organisations actually closed their doors, sent their volunteers home. And then we had those sort of that 20% who were actually being asked to ramp up their services because they were deemed essential services. And then, of course, they had a very different problem around having to find more volunteers to manage an increased demand in their services. So it's been a really different experience. And for those organisations that have had to stand down their volunteers, that sort of concerns for them around how to maintain relationships with their volunteers during the period of lockdown, because they don't want to get to the end of COVID-19 and then find that they don't actually have any volunteers to restart their program. How could they actually sort of maintain those warm relationships with their volunteers, if you like, so when they did need to restart, they could do that sort of quickly and easily?
Indeed, that would be a real challenge for those organisations. But let's take a quick break there now, but we'll be back in a moment to talk more about how these changes that volunteering and volunteers are facing are currently playing out and what they might look like in the future.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Kenny. Each week on the Democracy Sausage Pod, we serve up fresh, meaty analysis of Australia's politics and policy and chew the fat with some of the country's leading experts. It's the podcast for those who like sizzling scrutiny with just a touch of sauce. You can find Democracy Sausage on iTunes, Spotify, or at policyforum.net/podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm still here with Nick and Adrian. Now, I'd like to turn to the impact of COVID-19 on volunteering and what that means for society. Adrian, the measures that the Australian government has put in place to combat the spread of the virus do seem to be working, but there are still many things we don't know about COVID-19 and how prevalent it actually is in our societies. Do volunteers feel safe to do their work under the current circumstances?
Yeah, look, I think that's something that's certainly kind of become more obvious to all of us during this period, and that, you know, that we do talk about volunteers as a workforce. But I guess that the thing that we need to keep in mind is that they have, that organisations have the same obligations to volunteers as they do to paid employees. So we have a duty of care not to have volunteers in an unsafe working environment. And that's something that's been of great concern to a lot of organisations, which is why they often needed to close their doors. And there's some real concerns now, I guess, for organisations about the safety of those that are still volunteering, particularly those in essential services, but two, about the impact of the mental health of the volunteers that have actually been stood down. Of course, a lot of people volunteer because, you know, it's a way of them having a networking, of them getting out of the house, having those sort of social interactions. If they're not having that, what sort of impact is that having on those volunteers who are at home self-isolating in terms of their own mental health and well-being? So there's some real concerns there from sort of organisations that we've been speaking to.
Now, in the volunteering report, Nick and his co-author Matthew Gray found that 41% of those aged 65 and over reported that they'd undertaken some form of volunteering over the past 12 months, leading up to the end of 2019. Now, that is also one of the most vulnerable age groups to COVID-19. So how could the pandemic impact their participation in the long run? Do you think that those sort of older volunteers will come back to the volunteer organisations where they were giving their time?
Well, certainly I hope they do, because I think that they are such an important demographic in terms of volunteering. But I think there's some real concerns that they won't. And I think that one of the things that a lot of organisations will need to consider is how to re-engage with volunteers, particularly those in the older cohorts post-COVID. And, you know, one of the things that's emerged during this time is that we've seen organisations become a lot more innovative in the ways that they can still deliver some services, but also in the ways that they keep their volunteers engaged. You know, and I'm thinking, for example, organisations that run like a home visiting program. You know, so one of the things that they've done is adapt that service so they can still actually meet the needs of their clients, but not necessarily face-to-face. They can do that by writing letters to clients, by doing online services, by doing phone calls, for example. And potentially, if they are to adapt their programs, that is something that could still be something that an older volunteer could do, but still feel safe as well.
Nick, you mentioned before that your study found about 2/3 of volunteers have had to stop due to COVID-19, or the equivalent of 12.2 million hours per week. That sounds to me like it's going to have a pretty significant impact on Australia's society and economy. What does that look like?
Yeah, so I think what that really shows is that, firstly, how important volunteering was to start with, which we sometimes do overlook, but also that what I think is important is that the distribution of those who have stopped is different to the distribution of those who've continued. And certainly the types of volunteering or the organisations which rely on either older Australians, those who might have their own health conditions, or I guess people who are going to be placed in or feel a degree of financial stress and financial anxiety, they're the roles, they're the organisations which are going to be affected most by the drop in volunteering from COVID-19. And I think Adrian makes a really good point about the way in which organisations need to try to adapt to make use of more of an online or at least socially distanced form of volunteering. And I think the example which came to my mind was the very rapid change in general practitioners who have adapted to a telehealth, delivery of telehealth. Now, there's certain services which or roles which volunteers play which can be adapted, but there's many which can't. And I think those which can't be adapted, as a society or as a government, I guess we need to find ways to fill that gap somehow. Because as I said right at the start, those who rely on volunteers the most are often those who are most disadvantaged in the community.
Adrian, from Nick's remarks about the huge losses for Australia, would you say that the country's economy has become too reliant on volunteers?
Oh, it's a good question. I mean, how long is a piece of string kind of question, I guess. I guess from my point of view, volunteers obviously make a contribution economically and in other ways as well, but their contribution is just so much more. And I think I'd just like to use that example from the fires, where you might recall there was a lot of debate at the time about whether volunteers should be paid. And I think some quite high-profile people, particularly within the fire service, came out saying that no, volunteers shouldn't be paid, that people do volunteer for a whole range of reasons, and they don't do it because they want to get paid. They do it because they want to contribute, they want to connect with their community, and they want to make a difference for their community. I think if we didn't have volunteering, and that's just, and when I talk about volunteering, it's, you know, I think the benefits are for the recipient, for the clients or the recipients of volunteers, for the community, but also for the volunteers themselves. And that was an interesting part of the research, I think, Nick, which was around the mental health benefits of people who maintained volunteering or a volunteer role during the COVID-19 experience. So I think we are reliant on volunteers, but I think it's also about how we value that contribution and how we reposition the conversation. And it's about us not taking volunteers or volunteering for granted.
And what are some of the ways that we could actually value that contribution? I mean, some are suggesting that the pandemic should be an opportunity to sort of rethink and reshape both national and global economies. Where does volunteering fit into those types of discussions? What could and should volunteering look like coming out of the immediate pandemic danger?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this is the time for us to be really breaking with the past and really reimagining the future and what our world could actually look like in the future. And, you know, I feel like in the past, volunteers have been almost invisible and taken for granted, that we've seen volunteers as just sort of, you know, altruistic, and that they're just, it's just a particular group of people, and that we sort of, you know, we pat the volunteers on the head and we sort of say thank you. National Volunteer Week, for example. But, you know, I think it's about us recognising that volunteering is around us every day. It makes a massive contribution. And, you know, I think it's not just economically. It is about the, you know, think about the mental health benefits of volunteering. I mean, it's actually a preventative health measure. If we were to start to think about volunteering as a preventative health measure, one that doctors prescribed, you know, as a way of sort of, you know, alleviating mental health issues, if we were to think about it as an actual workforce that makes a massive contribution, I think we would start to then think about it more strategically, like how we can grow volunteering, how we can invest in volunteering, how we can make it easy for people to get involved, how we can make sure that when they do get involved that they're safe and they can be as effective as possible. It's about stopping taking volunteering for granted and seeing this as a serious force for good.
So, Martin, I might add something to that as well, which I think is quite important, is that COVID-19 has also created demand for additional services from volunteers which kind of weren't there beforehand. So if you think of people who are in self-isolation who need help with shopping, people who aren't able to undertake the same form of physical interaction which they would pre-COVID-19, requiring or benefiting from some forms of online interaction which might not have happened in the past. And also I think the very large decline in employment, which we also see in our survey, paid employment, is also going to mean that there's an increased demand for volunteering as we learn to live with COVID-19. And I think it's, while at the moment, at least in parts of, in Australia at least, we're thinking about relaxing of restrictions and a little bit more social interaction outside, the reality is for the next 6 to 12 months, at the very least, there's going to be a very different Australia than it was before. And I think volunteers can play an ongoing role in that, in the services or what they provided beforehand, but also new services and new roles, which we should, as Adrian said, not only support, but also recognise and value.
Mm. Nick, I mean, we've seen through the COVID-19 crisis something of a reclassification as to what society sees as essential workers. I mean, health workers are the most clear example of this. Do you think that there's any chance that society might come out the other side of this crisis with that kind of new value of the contribution and the work that volunteers do?
It's very hard to kind of predict the future, but one bit of data which I think is quite germane to that point is we asked in both February and April about the trust which Australians have for the rest of the Australian population. And what we found, similarly, it increases in trust both for volunteers and for non-volunteers. And what that shows to me is a greater acceptance or even a reliance on others due to the spread of COVID-19. And that's already been borne out in our data. And I don't expect that to return to kind of pre-COVID levels. So we as Australians are more trusting of others. We're more likely to think that other Australians are helpful. And we're more likely to think that other Australians are fair than even just 3 months ago. And what I think that suggests to me is a potential for volunteers to step into some of the gaps, as long as they are receiving that support and it's safe to do so. But there seems to be, at least from our data, a greater appetite from Australians for help and support from others.
Now, this has been a fascinating discussion, but before we finish up, I'd like to ask both of your advice to all of the policymakers that are listening now. Coming out of this crisis, what policies should we be putting in place to support and encourage volunteering? Perhaps, Adrian, if I can start with you.
Yeah, well, it's a really good question, and I think it's a really important one for us to consider, because I feel like we're at a bit of a sort of a tipping point moment right now, and I guess, you know, I'd be certainly encouraging policymakers to just temporarily press pause when we're in this sort of period between, you know, response and sort of moving into a recovery phase. So what can we actually, what do we want to stop, what don't want to do that we've done in the past, you know, and what do we want to start and what do we want to do differently now that we've had the learning opportunities from COVID-19? And I certainly would say for policymakers, it is about digging deep and investing in volunteering and valuing volunteering as a workforce. And certainly something that we would like to see progressing at the federal government level is a statement around volunteering, a volunteering statement. So we actually have, you know, sort of a public statement about this serious contribution and this serious workforce and how we can grow this and invest in it and maintain it. You know, really, the thing that I think from COVID-19 is that we've seen is that people have been finding new and different ways of connecting with each other. And what we're seeing is this sort of this common humanity and this common way of connecting and of being together is really what's important for all of us. You know, that's what volunteering is about. It's about connection, it's about belonging, and it's about contributing and making the world a different place. So we would really encourage policymakers to take this seriously and find ways that we can grow this and develop it.
Terrific. And Nick, what have we learned from the report that we might be able to turn into a policy that could paint a better picture for volunteers into the future?
Yeah, so I guess a couple of things. One is, from a policy perspective, finding ways to support volunteers who haven't been able to continue. The cost to the Australian society of deterioration in mental health outcomes is going to be large. So there's potentially large benefits of finding ways to support Australians who were previously volunteering or who would like to start doing so to continue, even if it's in a slightly different way. I think the other thing which our data certainly shows is the high level of trust and the increasing level of trust amongst Australians for those who are providing help. So while we didn't ask about trust in volunteers in our April wave, we did ask about confidence in the Rural Fire Service in our January wave. And we certainly found, not surprisingly, that almost exclusively, so I think it was like 93% of Australians had confidence in the Rural Fire Service, compared to less than a quarter in confidence in the federal government. And I guess one final point which I'd like to make, and it's maybe a little bit of a selfish one as a quantitative social scientist, but we don't really have very good data. So some of the estimates which we're using come from time use surveys from the mid-2000s. And I think tracking the contribution which volunteers have made through good data and what and how volunteers are spending their time is one way in which we can see and make that contribution visible.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion with lots of positive suggestions for how we can recognise and reward and create a new future for volunteers. So thank you both so much, Adrian and Nicholas, for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks very much.
Listeners, did you enjoy today's discussion? I hope you did. If you did so, then you should definitely subscribe to us. We're on Acast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite pods from. And don't forget to leave us a review. We always love hearing from you and about your ideas. As you know, each week we look at a different topic from a public policy angle, and we're always keen for fresh ideas, so we want to hear from you. Do get in touch with us. You can reach us on Twitter, where we are at APPS Policy Forum, that's Apps Policy Forum, or send us an email, podcast@policyforum.net, and share your thoughts, ideas, comments, or questions with us. Or better yet, join the Pod Squad on Facebook. We're Policy Forum Pod on there, and I look forward to seeing you there. We'll be back soon with another episode of Policy Forum Pod, but until then, stay safe, look after yourselves and one another, and cheerio for now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.